Blog Talk Radio.
And a pleasant good day to you. We're back again with another episode of Can We Be Real? And we've got Dr. William Washington on the line, calling all the way from the state of Washington as well. We're going to be talking about man talk this morning. We're going to talk about health and stress and lifestyles and nutrition. And we might even talk about that three-letter word of how we all got here. So let's get into it. We'll listen in. If you want to call in and have a question, we've got a whole 30 minutes, so we can cover a lot. Not quite. In 914-338-1573. And we're going to discuss some things this morning about men and why we're so reluctant to go to the doctor and what we can do to make a difference. Dr. William Washington, are you on the phone with us?
Yes, sir, Carl. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Thank you for taking time from your busy schedule and calling in and being with us this morning. I think that it's so important that the health issues of the day, and as we were discussing coming up, there's so many factors that are related to health and to what is really optimum health and how do we go about it in our hectic lifestyles in our lives. So if you had to say what is a good healthy person look like, what would you tell us, especially men?
You know, I think that's a kind of a hard one to pin down. You know, I think a good place to start would be to go to the World Health Organization definition of health. That's kind of one that I keep in mind. And, you know, they kind of mention the state of complete physical, mental, and social well-being. Not necessarily an absence of disease, but having those three components, the physical, the mental, and the social well-being in place. Obviously, that's very difficult to achieve on a regular basis because the social, you only have so much of a limited, ability to change. Your social well-being has a lot to do with the culture you're in, the environment we're all in this nation, which is, you know, is difficult and getting more and more difficult for many of us who are living at this time.
There's a lot of environmental problems and, you know, just like the fumes in the air and the situations that we cannot control. But some of the things we can control, I think, also is also like our attitude and what we eat. Do those really play an important part in our health?
Oh, absolutely. One thing to keep in mind is that who we are, what we look like, and what we manifest is about 5% genetic only. So if you think about that, you know, there's a lot of us who feel like, you know, our parents died of heart disease or had diabetes, had cancer, had these various components. We often hear that, you know, African Americans in particular are predisposed to different diseases, but only 5% of who you are and what you will be is genetic.
Okay.
And only 15% of who you are is actually exercise and activity. It turns out that the largest component of what you are, 80% of what you are, has to do with your diet.
Wow. 80% is what we eat.
Yeah, that's what a big diet is.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah. And so now if we – because I noticed myself when I started gaining a little extra weight and I just ate smaller meals and exercised a little more, then those things really helped a lot to turn my life around. And so what about nutrition and the food we eat, the fast food and stuff like that? How are supplements really good, or what do you think the best way to get a nutritious meal?
Well, I'm kind of on the fence with supplements. I think there's some really great supplements. If we have optimal diet, there's no need for supplements. Supplements is really a modern day way to address our deficiencies that come about from really our poor diet. So,
okay.
But, you know, going back to the diet itself, what we're really lacking in is vegetables. Not saying that we need to be carnivore. That's not saying that we, you know, that's not saying we need to be vegetarians, because there is a good place for meat. You know, I do think there's a great argument for having meat in the diet. So I don't think we need to have meat in the diet, but mm-hmm. I think you can make a good argument that there are pros to having meat in the diet in moderate amounts, up to about 15%, you know, but no more than 15% for sure. And what you really want to focus on is increasing your greens. The greens are what most of us are lacking in, and we're nowhere close to what our ancestors and our biological needs require in terms of greens. That's really the key. We're not getting nowhere close to the amount of greens we need. And by greens, I mean, you know, broccoli, kale, spinach, parsley, cilantro, those types of things, broccolini, that carry those antioxidants and nutrients that you would get in supplements, but we used to always get this, you know, just by our diet alone, you know.
Yes. Now, how about there's a lot of conversation now about genetically modified foods. Are you familiar with any of those or the effects of that? I know it's kind of early and not a lot of studies on it.
Yeah, I tell you, it's really scary. The stuff that I have seen, particularly when it comes to the mice studies and the rat studies that show the majority of mice and rats that were on genetically modified foods for the course of their life got cancers. Well, at least
wow.
tumors. Yeah. And it's so concerning that in a lot of countries they ban genetically modified foods imports from America.
Yes,
you know,
and here we don't even label them.
We don't even label them. It is really a tragedy. What this is setting us up for, in my opinion, is really, I mean, if you want job security, healthcare is the place to go. Because
okay.
yeah, because coming down the line, man, is going to be a lot of tumors and a lot of unexplained medical conditions that, you know, that are going to skyrocket because of this whole genetic modified foods that we have going on. 50% of our foods in this country are genetically modified as we speak. 90% of the corn, about 85% of the soy in this country is already genetically modified. And, of course, they don't have to label it. Your best bet is to go organic.
Yeah.
Even though it's more expensive, you know, I tell patients, you know, I'd rather have you go organic and eat less than to have just the possibility that you're taking in genetically modified foods. Now, that doesn't even incorporate the fact that in addition to genetically modification as a concern, you also have the pesticides. And when you're dealing with the meat, you also have the hormones and the antibiotics and things of that nature. You know, it's a big problem.
Yes, indeed. And I think a lot of times, too, we have to be kind of weigh and make our better decisions on the matters at hand, because one fellow put it this way. He said, well, if God didn't want us to eat meat or eat animals, well, why do they taste like meat? So, you know, you can laugh your way through, and sure enough, no one gets out of life alive, but I don't think it's the problem of leaving life. It's the problem of the quality of life that we have while we're here. And so if we can limit, like, why is cardiovascular disease the number one killer?
You know, and it's for the most part, it's completely environmental. You know, it's completely something that we as a society can address and almost eliminate. That's how much we know. That's how much we understand about this disease process of cardiovascular disease, yet we don't address it. You know, and it goes back to our diet. And it goes back to, in a large part, to the stress that we have on a daily basis as well. You know, they're showing that the stress that we have in this society, our day-to-day stresses have just as much of an impact on cardiovascular disease, you know. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, you take away things that you can improve, smoking, alcohol, you know, eating high cholesterol-dense foods. The biggest factor, aside from meat, even more so than me, which is really misunderstood, I think, as far as most people, is the fact that carbohydrates end up elevating your cholesterol even more than meat do.
Wow.
So you have a lot of us who are eating carbohydrate-dense food, a lot of breads, you know, which is not something our ancestors were doing. This is a new Western thing, this bread-dense culture we have that's causing us to have this skyrocketing cholesterol level that we all have.
Amazing.
You know?
So we kind of need to watch that bread and the cholesterol levels of the pastas and the rice and potatoes and so forth.
Yes. Yes, the first thing to cut out of your diet, if somebody's listening and they're interested in improving their diet, I would not recommend the meat. I actually would recommend cutting out the starches.
Wow. We do have a caller online. Caller, are you there? I think they just want to listen. So we'll let that go on. And one thing, another question that I had as far as, especially with men, we men are more reluctant to go to doctors. What do you suggest to the fellas and as far as going to the doctors and getting checkups and the PSA and so forth?
You know, it's huge, particularly, you know, one thing that's been linked to prostate disease is slightly controversial, but I think at the end of the day, most of us in the medical field agree that it's very linked to eating meat. So it goes back to the meat thing again.
Okay.
And it's also something that's very high, particularly in the African-American population, that we are in much higher risk for prostate disease. And so it's silent. So it's one of those things where a simple checkup around the age of 50, a PSA, can entirely clue you in to the possibility that you may have a tumor growing in the prostate. You know, and you can't, even though you can get a rectal exams are helpful, you know, they miss a lot of the prostate cancers. So you really got to go up and get that PSA to find out where you stand with that.
And now, is that a yearly check? Because it's actually a blood test, right?
It's a blood test, yeah. And they're recommending it around every 5 years or so after the age of 45 or 50, depending on your risk factors, your family history.
Now, from what I understand, too, that everyone pretty much has cancer cells in their body. And it's kind of like depending on our immune system, whether they replicate and so forth like that. Or what have you found about that?
That's a great question. You know, we're all cancer-making machines. I mean, cancers come and go. You know, I remember when I was in medical school, I read an article that discussed the fact that at least 5 times in your life, you will beat cancer. You know? And,
okay.
And so we have the ability to beat cancer, and we're doing it all the time. And in a strong, healthy person, you know, cancer is much less of a concern. But when your immune system is poor, you know, and for whatever reason, you know, the stress is causing your immune system to be poor, your diet is poor, you're going to have a very difficult time fighting these cancers before they reach a point where they're, you know, they're critical size and critical mass. So, yeah, I mean, we're constantly beating cancers. The other thing I would say is this, though, that there's a term called epigenetics, meaning that just because you have a particular gene, you know, because you can have say you have breast cancer, and there's a breast cancer gene that's just passed down from your ancestors. You see it's really prevalent in your family, you realize you have breast cancer. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to get breast cancer. The breast cancer gene only turns on when the conditions are optimal for it to do so.
Wow. You know, so we can't control a lot of that stuff, the cancers, and then by neutralizing our stress as well. You said the stress, it creates a condition that allows for these cells to multiply, or what do you say about stress and how that interacts?
Well,
the stress, what it does is diminishes your immune system. And it's your immune system is going to be fighting off the cancers, fighting off the infections, you know, and also fighting off inflammation, things like rheumatoid arthritis, lupus, which are very common in the community, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome, you know, things of that nature that that have to do with the inflammation in the body. Well, your body has a natural way of fighting that. It has to do with the hormones, testosterone, cortisol, and it also has to do with the immune system. All these things go down when you're under stress.
Wow. And so just by maybe spending some time meditating or some time just cooling out, walking in the park or go fishing or chilling out, that can actually prove very beneficial and pay off in the long run of giving you a better, healthy lifestyle.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. It pays dividends. I mean, you mentioned some great ways. One of the problems we have right now is one of the major problems of modern society is that we have, in the large part, lost our connection to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and our genetic requirement, based upon evolution, we spent a lot of our time, you know, our millions of years on this planet, being very tied in and very close to this planet, Mother Earth, and having that connection. And so losing that in a matter of just a few hundred years, which we have, has cost us immensely, you know. And so finding ways to get back out there and just, you know, just getting in touch with nature. I mean, you can feel it. I don't care who you are. You don't have to be the best, you know, to really understand yoga or meditation or et cetera. If you get out there in the woods and you just be quiet,
yes,
nature will do the rest for you.
They had a study that I just watched a movie. It was a documentary, and it was one of the maximum security prisons in Alabama. And the movie is called Dharma Brothers. And these are some hardcore lifers that were in there, and they taught them how to meditate over a 10-day period. It totally transformed the prison to the point that these guys were operating in their own world within the prison that lowered their stress. And in these 10 days that they were locked in this room, they had to listen to themselves, listen to their self-breathing, and get in tune to themselves so that we could learn to live with ourselves. Now, one of the things that I concern myself about is the prevalence towards worry and the fear that we have in our society. Is worry a factor in that as well?
Huge. You know, it's a huge factor. And, we have to address the society, because what's happening now is the poor are getting poorer. There's more and more inequality. With inequality, you know, comes less trust, a lot of the things that come with poverty, like crime, you know, like poor health and things of that nature. All these things have to do with the society we live in. I remember a quote by Martin Luther King saying that, you know, here we are today at a crossroads, and this is like 40 years ago, and he essentially said, you know, here we are today at a crossroads where we have all the resources and all the technology to take care of every human need on this planet.
Yes.
And here we are now, 40 years later, and the resources we know are just as prevalent as they were there, and we have quite a bit more technology to take care of people's needs, and yet we don't, which is sad.
You know,
so here we are. Here we are as a people, and to achieve optimal health really is a day-to-day grind and struggle in and of itself to maintain the mental, you know, physical health that we desire. It's a struggle. You got to struggle every day at it, you know?
And one of the things, I think it's a twofold prong, because if someone is in a position and they're making $5 billion or $100 million a year and they're living this great big pampered lifestyle, but then you've got other guys on the street that are barely making it, and I know you're such a given person. You started a homeless clinic in Chicago and work with homeless people up in Seattle and,
yes,
and in
sir.
Washington State area. And if we had more people like you, I'm going to tell you this place would be better. But my idea is that those that are, you know, in positions to make a difference, then they can't. Our society would be better if we would learn to look out for one another and care for one another, because the resources are here, but unfortunately we just don't get to the point where we want to, build what Dr. King called the beloved community.
Right.
And so for the last 7 or 8 minutes we've got here, let's kind of focus on some solutions and tell us a little bit about you working as a healthcare person and with a homeless clinic, and what is your philosophy for making the world a better place?
Well, I consider myself an activist first in terms of being a physician. I was a physician second. Obviously, I'm an activist first and foremost. I believe in Martin Luther King. I mean, I think, and of course, Malcolm X. I kind of find myself being caught in between the two, basically a proletarian, somebody that's for the people, whatever
yeah.
that means, you know. And, you know, I really believe in my soul that it's going to take a drastic change in the paradigm that we're currently living in of capitalism. You know, I think
mm-hmm.
it worked really well at one point. But until we can now face the fact that this particular paradigm we're living in is just not working.
Yeah.
You know, it's just no longer relevant, and it's taking its toll on our health, and it's taking its toll on our earth.
Yes.
You know, and we all are in this together now, because once the earth starts to crumble the way it is,
yes.
You know, and this whole health conversation is going to be a moot point, because it's not going to matter. It's not going to matter how much, you know, if you can't breathe the air around you.
Exactly. Or if there's major floods coming and your homes are being washed away and whole communities are being destroyed. One thing that Dr. King said too, we may have come on different ships, but we're all in the same boat now.
Yes, we're all very much in the same boat now. It's a small world, you know, and you look around what's going on all over the earth, and you see a lot of these mini revolutions. You know, they're proletarian revolutions in their heart, that they're trying to rebel against this monster that has run its course, this monster of global capitalism, where you have the corporations basically setting the rules. You know, in this conversation, it's not a Democratic versus Republican conversation. We're all in this together, because if this, you know, all these things are factors to all of us. And what's happening, you can look at the elections right now, and you see how much corporations have played a role in them. And how much
just
they
enormous
really
amounts
have.
Of money just spent on advertising and to hold people down and control people's mindset. But the situation is that you can't hold a population of people in poverty or low income or no income wages without stifling the growth of the entire nation.
Exactly. And, you know, if I can say one thing towards, you know, I wish there were more candidates, but in terms of the two candidates that we do have, you know, there was no conversation about the poor. You
None.
Know, and, you know, as far as, you know, you talk about the philosophy of Martin Luther King, that's not his vision. You know, we're talking about the middle class. That's great. Talking about, you know, the rich. That's, you know, but where is the proletarian in him? Where's the one that's saying, look, we have to take care of the poor?
Yes.
You know? And it's, you know, the poor are, we have millions of poor in this country who don't have a voice whatsoever, you know. That's
it
what we
is, it
take
is
care
so
of.
True, because the One of the things is that, you know, that came up the conversation, there's a safety net for the poor and so forth like that. But I would venture to say that anybody who's making those kind of statements would not like to live like a poor person for a week, much less their lifetime.
No.
And the key to it, if we can get to the point where we get beyond selfishness and start to work together, the idea that we have, where Dr. King also said this here, the idea that there's little hope for us until we become tough-minded enough to break loose from the shackles of prejudice, half-truth, and downright ignorance.
Yes, sir.
And so if we had a way to just kind of, you know, get to the point where, you know, the health issue is sure enough, it's physical, it's mental, it's social, but the idea comes to us just working together and lifting the poor. Because one thing also, if you read the scriptures, it also says that how God always intervenes on the side of the least of these. And
yep.
It's amazing that some of the corollaries that we have in our society, that we've forsaken some of the basic tenets of looking out for your brother or looking out for your sister. If we could do more of that in a way, and that brings up the health care issue as far as Obamacare and so forth. And if you had, in the last 2 minutes, why don't you share with us, you know, as far as nationwide health care and the work you're doing for the homeless population?
Well, thank you. The work I started at Homeless Connect in Chicago just because it was a population that I've always been passionate about, you know, and I see them on the streets, and I always want to sit next to them and just learn their story. And so I wanted to go ahead and make a difference for them. And so I started Homeless Connect in Chicago before I moved to Seattle. Since I moved to Seattle, I've been more involved in the Native American population, which is a whole different conversation, and I would love to touch base on a separate occasion about that.
Okay.
But really quickly, and you should have me on your show talking about that sort of thing, but really quickly in terms of the healthcare conversation, you know, I'm really frustrated that we're not really having a healthcare conversation. What we're really having is a sick care conversation. Who's going to pay for it, you know? And it's really not progressive in any way of dealing with these problems that we just spent the last half hour talking about. All those problems are not going to go away until we can have a conversation that's willing to address the underlying issues, you know, and we're not. We're just talking about who's going to pay for it. You know, quite frankly, it's just really frustrating. I don't see any change, you know.
And healthcare ought not to be a profit business.
It shouldn't. And going back to what Martin Luther King was about, you know, if you have the resources and you have the technology to house and clothe and have health for everybody in the nation, why wouldn't you just make it a law? Why would you make it so that we have to pay for anything, whether it's insurance or anything? You have the resources and you have the technology. Give it to the people. That's
yes.
The philosophy that we need to have, you know?
Yeah, and being that, where, as you say, our bodies are so fine-tuned that we're constantly beating cancer. But I think the cancer physically is often less pathological than the mental cancers that we project upon each other.
Oh, yes. Yep.
I tell you, we're coming down. It's been a minute and a half left to go. And Dr. Washington, man, I sure glad and thank God for Facebook, too, because that's how I met you. And I sure appreciate your activism, working with the people. And actually, you're just getting off work. So we greatly will appreciate you calling in and taking time from your busy schedule and the work that you do. God bless you, man.
Thank you very much. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, and we will plan another show sometime in the future. But knowing, folks, this is Can We Be Real? And Dr. William Washington of Seattle, we celebrate you because you've been real with us this morning. Keep working for the least of these and helping people out because I know it does make a difference. And one thing about life is that what goes around comes around. And so for all of the folks out there, if you're going to do good, knowing that good measure, pressed down, shaken together, the same thing that we send out, whether you call it sowing and reaping or the law of karma or, you know, what goes around comes around, what you do, the good that you do, will make all the difference in life. So never stop. No worry about it. Like Dr. Washington said, man, we're constantly beating cancer. That is a good thing in our bodies, each and every day, in our minds, in our lives, in our city. We need to constantly beat down the cancer of ignorance and those that want to just push people down. God bless you in a real way. Protect you and direct you. Until we meet again, I'm Help Somebody. Oh, Can We Be Real?